Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a look at some major headlines from May 20th, 2025. We've got a couple of key sources here.
Yes, transcripts from Democracy Now!, which gives us that broad global view, and also a CNN report focusing more specifically on President Trump, tariffs, and Walmart.
Exactly. And our aim today really is to cut through all that noise. We want to understand the connections, you know, between international conflicts, diplomatic moves, and these big economic decisions.
Mm-hmm. Both globally and right here in the U.S. The goal is to give you a clearer picture of how these things intersect and, well, what it might all mean down the line.
Okay, let's dive right in with a really critical situation in Gaza. The U.N. is sounding a major alarm.
A catastrophic one, it sounds like. Potentially 14,000 infant deaths in the next couple of days if significant aid doesn't get in.
Yeah. Now, there was some movement, 100 aid trucks approved. That's, well, it's more than the single digits the day before, right? First food in after that long blockade.
True. But a U.N. official basically said it's a drop in the ocean. The need is just immense. Sounds like widespread famine is a real threat.
And we're seeing more international pressure building on Israel.
Definitely. Key allies, Canada, France, the UK, they're reportedly considering sanctions if the offensive doesn't stop and aid isn't allowed in properly.
That's significant coming from them. And wasn't there a joint statement too?
Yes, from 23 allies calling for a, quote, full resumption of aid immediately. That kind of pressure from traditional allies, it could signal a real shift.
Yet on the ground, the situation is still incredibly bleak. Reports of continued bombardment, even in places like Khan Yunis after evacuation orders.
And attacks on a school shelter, Nasser Hospital, the WHO condemned that strongly.
Right. The hospital director's plea about the ICU being overwhelmed, no beds for critical patients, it just paints a devastating picture.
And adding another layer to this, you've got the Houthi movement in Yemen.
Yes, their announcement.
Escalating support for Palestinians, including this naval blockade on Israel's port of Haifa. That could really disrupt trade and, well, just adds more volatility to the region.
Okay, let's shift focus closer to home now. A big decision from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Allowing the removal of protections, the Biden-era ones, for Venezuelan immigrants with TPS. That's temporary protected status.
And that affects, what, nearly 350,000 people?
That's the number, yeah. And what's really striking is how the court do it. An unsigned, two-paragraph order, no explanation given.
Which is unusual, right? It leaves a lot of questions.
It really does. The federal judge who initially blocked this removal down in San Francisco warned about irreparable harm, economic costs, even public health issues.
And I saw a quote from an attorney calling it the largest single action stripping immigration status in modern U.S. history. That really highlights the scale.
It absolutely does. A huge potential impact.
Staying with legal political stuff. New Jersey Congressmember Lam Monica Massiver, she's been charged.
Yes, assault charges against federal agents. This happened during an oversight visit to an immigration detention center in Newark.
And wasn't the Newark mayor also arrested during that same visit? Ross Baraka.
He was, yes, though his trespassing charges were apparently dropped pretty quickly by Alina Haba,
who is acting U.S. attorney and also Trump's personal lawyer.
Correct. So Congressmember Massiver is calling the charges against her purely political. And the ACLU chimed in warning about, you know, targeting elected officials trying to do oversight.
That's a complex mix. Legal, political oversight function.
Exactly. The ACLU's point about a potential chilling effect on oversight, that's a core issue of checks and balances, really.
Okay, let's pivot back internationally. Ukraine. Yep. President Trump and President Putin had a phone call.
A long one, apparently, 2 hours. And reports suggest Trump has sort of shifted his position. He's dropped the demand for an immediate ceasefire.
Okay, so what's he suggesting instead?
Direct negotiations between Moscow and Kyiv. Without direct U.S. involvement, it seems.
But Putin's response.
He stated Russia's goals haven't changed and rejected a U.S. proposed ceasefire. So not much movement there, it seems.
And President Zelensky's reaction, he wasn't buying it.
No, he accused Russia of just trying to buy time with talk of negotiations. Deep mistrust there, obviously different goals.
Meanwhile, the EU announced more sanctions.
The 17th package, yes. The EU foreign policy chief expressed hope for, you know, consequences if Putin doesn't agree to an unconditional ceasefire. shows the different desires for how peace should look.
And potentially related, there's talk of easing sanctions on Syria.
Yeah, following President Trump's announcement that the U.S. would, EU nations are apparently preparing to do the same, as Syria starts rebuilding after Assad.
Interesting. Raises questions about sanctions strategy, how priorities might be shifting there.
And shifting again, UK-EU relations. 5 years after Brexit, we're seeing, what, a reset?
Seems like it. They've signed some new deals on trade and defense.
What kind of deals?
Reports mention easing checks on animal and plant products, extending EU access to UK fishing waters, trying to make travel easier.
But not everyone's happy, I assume.
No, the UK Conservative Party is already criticizing Prime Minister Starmer, accusing him of surrendering to the EU. So, still very sensitive politically.
Always complex, that relationship.
Now, some really disturbing reports coming out of India. The UN is calling for an investigation.
Yes, concerning Rohingya refugees. Allegations that Indian authorities rounded them up in New Delhi, children included.
Put them on ships to the Andaman Sea and then just pushed them into the water near Burma with only life jackets.
That's the allegation. It's incredibly concerning, especially against this backdrop of what seems like a wider crackdown on Muslim minorities in India and tensions with Pakistan.
Just awful. A reminder of how vulnerable refugees can be.
Absolutely. That UN investigation call is crucial for accountability.
Let's talk about global health. The WHO, the World Health Organization, is warning about medical shortages.
Yeah, in dozens of countries due to global funding cuts. It's having real effects. People missing treatments, clinics closing, healthcare workers losing jobs.
And people having to pay more out of pocket, right?
Right.
In at least 70 countries.
Exactly. And the WHO director, Tedros, warned of a huge budget gap, $600 million, and potentially more cuts coming, partly because the U.S. pulled back support.
That's worrying, especially now.
Yeah.
Didn't the WHO just vote on a new pandemic treaty?
They did, yes, aimed at better preparedness and vaccine access globally. But it's worth noting, the U.S. wasn't part of those talks, a clear divergence in approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back in the U.S., political appointments. Charles Kushner confirmed as ambassador to France.
Right. Billionaire real estate developer, father of Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law.
And his background includes that 2020 pardon from Trump for federal crimes.
Yes, witness tampering. The details were quite something, hiring a prostitute to seduce his brother-in-law, secretly recording it.
So that confirmation, it definitely raises some eyebrows, you'd think.
Well, given the pardon, the family ties, it inevitably brings up questions about, you know, influence, personal connections, and diplomatic roles.
And speaking of potential conflicts, ProPublica had those reports about cabinet secretaries selling stock.
Yes. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy selling stock in, what, 34 companies? Just days before Trump announced the tariffs, which obviously moved the market.
And Attorney General Pam Bondi selling a lot of stock in Trump's social media company before the same announcement.
Mm-hmm. It naturally leads to questions about whether non-public information was involved and just the general ethics around cabinet officials' financial dealings when policy changes are imminent.
Okay, let's touch on some social and cultural issues in the U.S. Maryland Governor Wes Moore vetoed a reparations study bill.
He did, which is notable. As you said, he's the country's only sitting black governor, often talked about for 2028. And this goes against similar bills passing in places like California, New York, Illinois.
How's that being received?
The Maryland Legislative Black Caucus condemned it. They might try to override the veto. It just shows the complexity of the reparations debate, even within the Democratic Party.
Then in New Orleans, the police have paused using facial recognition.
Yeah, after a Washington Post story exposed it, apparently they were using this private network of over 200 cameras, maybe without proper oversight, possibly violating a city ordinance.
A nonprofit at the University of New Orleans was involved.
Reportedly provided the tech. It just highlights the whole debate around facial recognition, privacy, bias, the need for clear rules.
And at Virginia Commonwealth University, a graduate was denied her diploma over Palestinian rights activism.
That's the allegation. Sarin Haddad. The university also apparently cracked down on the Students for Justice in Palestine group, even banning sidewalk chalk.
She spoke out about it.
Yes, calling it hypocrisy from VCU, given their talk about supporting marginalized voices. She has a deep personal connection, too, lost many family members in Gaza, and her father reportedly refused to meet Secretary Blinken over the administration's stance.
Wow. That raises serious questions about free speech on campus, especially around sensitive global issues.
Absolutely. It's a tough balance for universities.
Okay, a few more quick hits. Oklahoma's new social studies curriculum.
Yeah, this one's controversial. It reportedly encourages students to find discrepancies in the 2020 election results. driven by a Trump-supporting superintendent and input from, well, far-right figures.
Concerns about political bias in education there, clearly.
Definitely raises those flags.
And teachers in California protesting outside SpaceX.
Yes, thousands of them. Protesting cuts to education, special ed, student meals, highlighting that tension between, you know, big private industry and funding for public services.
Then there's the move on forced reset triggers.
Right. The Trump administration apparently paving the way for selling these devices that make semi-automatic rifles fire much faster, almost like machine guns, following a Justice Department settlement.
Gun control groups must be condemning that strongly.
You'd expect so. It's a significant shift in federal gun policy.
And finally, Missouri Republicans pushing an abortion referendum.
Yes, to reinstate a near-total ban. This is even though voters previously put abortion rights into the state constitution. This referendum bypasses the governor, likely heading for the 2026 ballot.
Just underscores the ongoing state-level battles over abortion access.
For sure. Very complex legal and political landscape there.
Okay, now let's really dig into this major economic story, which ties back to some of the politics we discussed. President Trump telling Walmart to eat the tariffs.
Yeah, don't pass the costs on to consumers. This came right after Walmart said publicly that they'd likely have to raise prices because of these new tariffs on goods from China and elsewhere, 10-30% potentially.
It's very direct pressure on a huge company.
Extremely. Augusta Sariva at Bloomberg News really highlighted the tough spot Walmart is in. They have to balance keeping customers happy, especially when consumer sentiment is reportedly shaky.
Right.
And protecting their own profits, which are surprisingly thin, less than 3% net margin apparently.
So Sariva suggested Walmart's announcement was maybe strategic.
Could be. A warning to consumers. Maybe. But also, possibly, a signal back to the White House about the real-world impact of these policies.
Jack Buffington, the supply chain expert from University of Denver, he had a pretty stark take, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He basically said it's financially impossible for Walmart, or any big retailer really, to just absorb tariffs like that without losing money.
Because so many of their products are affected.
Yeah, he estimated about a third of Walmart's stuff is subject to these tariffs, averaging maybe 10-15%. And he stressed it's the smaller businesses that will struggle even more with supply and pricing, especially with consumer sentiment being low.
Professor Buffington also mentioned disruptions already happening. Empty ports.
Well, reduced activity, yeah. China apparently halted some shipping. And while shipping volumes fluctuate, this kind of uncertainty just gums up the works. Lost capacity, lost efficiency in the supply chain.
And that has real-world consequences for workers.
Definitely. Fewer goods moving means fewer jobs for dock workers, truckers, warehouse staff.
Gene Soroka from the Port of Los Angeles confirmed this, right, with actual data.
Yes, he talked about a significant number of canceled cargo ship sailings from China just in May.
Yeah.
He specifically mentioned the impact on longshoremen, drivers, warehouse workers, fewer opportunities.
And he raised concerns about seasonal goods, stuff we rely on.
Big concerns. He said importers are hesitant. They don't know what the final price will be, so they're holding back on orders for back to school, Halloween, and especially Christmas and the holiday season.
Which are crucial retail periods.
Hugely important. So importers are being cautious about quantity and price.
And Soroka emphasized the lag time, didn't he? It's not like things can change overnight.
Exactly. Even if tariffs were reversed tomorrow, it takes weeks for ships to get redeployed, for goods to actually make it through the system and onto shelves.
So the bottom line for us, for consumers.
His prediction was pretty clear. Expect fewer choices on the shelves and very likely higher prices for a lot of things.
So wrapping up this deep dive, it really strikes you how interconnected everything is. International conflicts, political decisions, economic policies like tariffs.
Yeah, it's a complex web. You see the direct line from a policy decision in Washington to the price of goods in your local store, or how geopolitical tensions impact aid getting to desperate people in Gaza.
Key takeaways for me are definitely that link between tariffs and consumer costs, and also just how fragile things are for vulnerable groups, immigrants, civilians in conflict zones, even low-income shoppers here.
Mm-hmm. And the tension between political goals and what's actually happening on the ground, that comes through again and again.
And it really drives home that these headlines aren't just abstract news items.
Mm.
They have real potential to affect our communities, our finances, our whole understanding of the world.
Absolutely. Which kind of leads to a final thought for you, the listener. Given all this volatility we've talked about, shifting trade rules, conflicts, political uncertainty, what's the role of just being aware of critically consuming information?
How can understanding these deeper connections maybe empower us to make more informed choices in our own lives, perhaps? or even, contribute somehow to navigating this complex global picture. Something to think about.